Welcome, everybody, and welcome to podcast number 8 of The Candle Guys. Tonight's episode, not tonight, again, in podcast time, in timeless time, tonight's episode is waxes, waxes, and more waxes. Tonight, we're going to be discussing paraffin. We've had some natural wax conversations, and tonight, we're going to start to talk about the raw material that basically started it all. So, Joe, with that said, let's kick it off.
So we have here Steve Bell from IGI, one of the oldest wax companies that catered to the candle business. My father worked for IGI for many years in the cosmetic end. So IGI is near and dear to me. Known Steve for a while. Steve's been in the industry for a while. How long have you been in this, Steve?
Since 1999.
Okay. And how long has IGI been around?
They were incorporated in 1945 out of Toronto, Canada.
Okay. And they have several refineries in the U.S. and Canada?
They have a headquarters and refinery in Toronto, Canada. They have another refinery in Western Pennsylvania in an area called Farmers Valley. And then we have one of our suppliers that is a refinery that we own and operate in the Salt Lake City area called Silver Eagle that provides us with our feedstock.
Okay. And what are some of the candle brands that are out there now? I know there's a lot of designations for your wax out there, but just to make everyone kind of identify with IGI, what are some of the name brands out there?
Okay. IGI historically has not been a very strong marketing company or put directed efforts to that. You may see products under what's called Paraflex, the Paraflex name. You will see product codes that are typically four digits with a letter. So products include 6006A, 4630A, 4625A. It's just a numerical system we use internally for our product codes. And we haven't really promoted brands, believe it or not.
Nothing real sexy about your designations, huh? Just numbers and letters.
No.
I must be doing it a long time because I remember when it was only two letters.
Yeah.
We're up to four letters now.
There was an effort a long time ago to try to put some names to the blends that would be more like they had one they called Comfort Blend. And
The
smaller candle makers actually did seem to gravitate towards that and remember those names. And we still get inquiries for those names even today, even though we probably haven't used them in like over 10 years, probably 15 years we haven't used them. So, but it stuck on with some of the old time customers.
Would Comfort Blend turn into another designation, or it was just kind of replaced with something else?
No, we always had the numbered designation. So at IGI, one easy way one can remember it is the product codes that start with a 4 are typically our petroleum wax blend, petroleum wax blend. And if the product starts with a 6, it's a petroleum wax, but blended with another type of wax, such as a vegetable wax.
Oh, good to know. Good to know.
So when IGI is developing blends, what's the theory behind it? Is it what niche are they looking to fill when they come up with a blend?
Okay, so we already have lots of different blends that we've already made for customers in general, like the 6006. Another one we have very popular is 4630A. There's a product called 4625A that's popular for pillar candles, et cetera, et cetera. So normally what would happen is a customer would contact us and say, hey, I want to make candles, or I make candles. And then we would go through a progression of identifying what the requirements are specifically for the candle. So this would be how much fragrance are you going to put in? Are you going to make certain marketing claims? What type of jars are going to be put in? What type of machine are you going to pour it with? And we go through this series of requirements that they have, how much do you need, et cetera. And then we would match the product to those requirements that we have. In some cases, the customer may have requirements unique enough that it does not meet a blend that we already have. And so in that case, we would work with our technical services manager and R&D lab in Toronto, and then they would develop the blend for that customer. One of the requirements of doing that is that they do have to buy a relatively significant amount of product, because we have to justify the development cost, and we have, you know, there's a physical minimum amount you need to blend to be able to produce the product. But we have numerous products at this point now. It's very rare that we don't have something that quite fits what the customer is looking for.
And in today's market, with all those different blends that you have, are there certain criteria as far as melt points, stabilities, things along that line that the blends are tested for that on a normal basis?
Yeah. So an example of kind of going back to your last question on developing a product. One product we did develop really without any specific customer request was a product we have called 6046A. And 6046A is a blend with coconut wax in it. It has the petroleum-based wax, but also has the coconut wax, because we had, you know, our market indications had said there would be a lot of customers that would like this, and they have. And coconut wax in general has a very, very low melt point. So one of the requirements is, you mentioned stability. So if a customer is going to be making candles that are sold on Amazon and it's going to go into a warehouse in Dallas, you can't make the product with a melt point that's too low. It's just going to, the product will deform. It'll be a big mess. If the customer is going to incorporate a high amount of fragrance, and by high, I mean 8% by weight or higher, we have to develop the formula so it can accommodate those fragrances, hold them into the formula, and provide that stability.
Now, when you talk about, you know, you had mentioned amounts and these blends that you come up with, I know you deal with a lot of distributors. Do you have distributors all around the country, or you just have certain regions that you work with? And you want to name some of those distributors? So, because a lot of our listeners will be on that small to medium size.
Oh, sure. Yeah. We do work with a lot of the major candle distributors. We don't work with every single, we have a distributor policy. So we try to keep with certain partners that understand the product and work well within our business systems. Some big ones that we work with are Lone Star Candle Supply in the Dallas area, Aztec International, whom you're familiar with in the Knoxville area, Candle Science in the North Carolina area, Candle Wick, which is a very long-standing, excellent run family company that has been in the candle industry forever. Some lesser known, not necessarily lesser known, but not ones that pop up on everyone's mind. We have a company called DPS Wax we work with in the Kansas City area. We have an outfit called the Candle Maker Store in the Cincinnati area that's sells a lot of different of our waxes. They're on the West Coast. We work with a company called Let It Shine USA. We have international distributors, called All Dirt Chemical. It's in the Toronto area that has sold our products for probably going on 17, 18 years now. If I had to guess, I'm looking at the map, just making sure I'm not forgetting anybody, but, we have other distributors that carry our waxes, but they tend not to cater to the candle industry. They cater to other industries and applications, and the ones I mentioned are pretty much all focused on the candle industry.
Would you say a lot of your blends are still considered fully refined or use fully refined paraffins in them?
Okay, so let's just, for the audience, define what a fully refined paraffin wax is.
Sure, yeah.
So a fully refined paraffin wax is where when we refine the wax from the raw material, it contains some oil, colorant.
Wait, Steve, I don't mean to interrupt you. Yeah. I think it's a good time to start. You're right, but let's even back up further.
Okay.
Most people don't even know where the wax, how waxes come about.
Okay. You want me to start on that?
Yeah. So if you could take them around, we would really appreciate the
start. Okay. Start from the dinosaur.
Okay. Okay. So a company like IGI refines is a refiner of wax. We blend the waxes. So where do we derive the wax from? Our raw material is what's known in the industry as a slack wax. The slack wax comes from other refineries that make lubricant oils, base oils, fuels, all kinds of stuff. If you look into the lubricants industry, that you'll run across the term base oils. And there's different, these base oils make different classes of lubricants, starting with group one, they have group two, three, and four. The group one lubricants are significant because when they make group one lubricants, you have a refinery that's making different product streams off their process. And one of those product streams that comes off is the slack wax. And the slack wax is essentially a wax that's got a ton of oil in it. And if the company that produces that slack wax has the ability to further refine it, they would do that. So there are companies that have that capability. Like IGI, for example, when we have our facility in Utah. But that product is used, it can be used in some industries, even though it's unrefined and very oily and it's not very consistent, but it can be used by some industries as a more cost-effective product, but most industries cannot use it. So we would take that slack wax, and then it goes to the IGI refinery. And the basis behind paraffin wax refining is you have a stage called de-oiling. And in the de-oiling stage, there are solvents that are mixed with the slack wax. It goes through a series of heat exchangers and is cooled. And during this process, what happens is the solvent and the solid portion of the wax, they separate. So the wax precipitates out from the solvents. The solvents are recovered in the process. And now you're left with a wax that has the oil removed. It does have a color and odor to it. And then that wax further goes through a filtration process that removes the color and odor. And I'm simplifying this a bit.
Sure, that's perfect.
For sake of the podcast, but it's it goes through a filtering process. And what you get out of that is typically is a fully refined paraffin wax. And when we say fully refined paraffin wax, we're saying that the product has 0.5% oil or less in the product, as opposed to the slack wax could have 5, 10, even 20, 25% oil in it. It is also important to remember that a refined wax does not necessarily have to have 0.5% wax or less. I'll talk a little bit further in the podcast about microcrystalline waxes, which are a category of petroleum waxes, and they can tend to have a little bit more oil in them because of the way the molecules are arranged. And then there are other waxes that we would make called, that can be used in candles called scale wax or semi-refined waxes. And those products have a very small amount of oil left in them, but more than 0.5%. They might have 2 or 2.5%. Those products are also very clean and non-toxic. It's actually the products that you would use if you were to go to a spa and dip your hand in the wax. Those would be referred to as a scale wax. So once these products are produced at the refinery level, then they can further be blended into the candle blends. In the candle blends, though, it's, we're not just using fully refined paraffin waxes. There are other types of wax streams that we can produce that are soft or hard or whatever we need to do to add to the properties of the candle. An example of one is from a wax refinery. I mentioned paraffin wax. We can also produce a wax called microcrystalline wax. The microcrystalline wax is a petroleum wax that has a higher molecular weight. It's more viscous, higher melt point, things like that, where its properties differ from the paraffin wax. And we can blend those two together to get unique properties. A good example is if you were to go to a grocery store and you look at the cheese section, that there's cheeses that have wax on them. And those waxes are a blend of paraffin and microcrystalline. And this is an example of people will ask, well, are the petroleum waxes safe? Well, they've been used for decades in all kinds of applications people do in everyday life. I mentioned the hand dipping, the cheese waxes, and they're also used in food packaging, all kinds of things, cosmetics, personal care products, shampoos. It's in all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, I always tell people when they have no idea what wax, that it's in practically everything you eat, that you touch, what it's packaged in. You know, a lot of fruits coated with wax. The carton, your milk cartons are coated with wax. Just to the debate of whether it's, you know, paraffin wax is toxic or not.
Yeah, in fact, paraffin wax is if you put it in the ground, it will biodegrade. Now you have to be careful how you say biodegradability. If you were to run the degradation tests, there's an ASTM for running the degradation of waxes, but if you were to run that, you would find the wax would break down. One of the big applications that people don't realize is paraffin and microcrystalline waxes are used in chewing gums.
Right.
So once we refine the waxes, they by nature of refining them like that, they typically will meet two classes of FDA. And I may be getting too technical here, but I'll just say it anyway. One requirement is 178.3710. So that's an FDA statute that outlines the requirements for a wax being in contact with a food. So this would, for example, this would be in your food packaging, like a sandwich wrap or hamburger wrap. The other requirement is 172.886. And that is for when you use the wax directly in the food, like you would in a chewing gum. So typically by refining the wax, you're going to meet at least one, if not both of those requirements.
So those same waxes that became FDA approved are actually being used in the candle formulas.
Yes. Now another type of product that you'll see or category of product that will find its way into the waxes that's petroleum based is one your father's very familiar with is the petrolatum.
Right.
So the petrolatum is a combination of oils. And when we talk oils, we're talking not oil like you put in your car. We're talking like mineral oils and those types of highly refined oils, almost like a baby oil type thing. But a petrolatum is a combination of these oils in waxes. And you get this very soft, most people would know it as Vaseline, right?
Right.
And it's a trait. Those types of products can be also incorporated into a candle formula to provide some softness, adhesion to the jar, things like that. So, most of these components that go, when you look at these components that go into the wax, they're things that people are using every day.
Also, from a candle maker's perspective, guys, just to give you a quickie rundown over what Steve said when he was talking about the grades of waxes, when we talk about fully refined with low oil content, that means the wax is usually going to be harder, more brittle. You're going to use it in an application more of a molding application, a pillar application, an application where you're going to need that hardness to release from your molds or during the process. The scale waxes, the slack waxes can then start moving more into container fills. They're slightly softer. They have that little more oil in them. They lend themselves not to stand on their own as much. So they get mixed with other things to become container blends or tarts or scent chips. And then the slacks that are the higher end with more oil wind up usually on the lower end candle of a citronella candle, outdoor things that when they burn, the oil may smoke a little bit. So it's not indoors and you're using it for the correct application. Then the feedstocks that Steve was talking about get added to those waxes to make the candles the way that you want them. It, like Steve said, more adhesion, less adhesion, how quickly they burn, how quickly they pool out. So these are all the different additives and the tools you have to put into your toolbox to make a candle formula. But what Steve does is he eliminates all that work for you and takes all the different feedstocks and the different things available to you and makes the blends available.
Yeah, there's a gentleman I met a long time ago when I started at IGI. His name was Dick Scuderi, and he had a place called Walnut Hill Waxes, which is no longer open. But so he got started by he noticed that hobby stores back in the day were things you know mostly guys would go to, right, for like model cars and things like that. And he observed that these folks would be with their spouse or significant other, girlfriend, and they didn't really have anything that they would be interested or could shop for there. And so he started making these candle kits, and it took off. And I remember he would coin the term that candle making is an art and a science. Mm. And that's kind of the way he used to put it, because you can take two waxes that look exactly the same, have the same specifications, you put them into the candle blend and they perform completely differently. And there are some reasons for that. I can delve into the details if you want, but that is where our expertise and experience comes in, is we have to go through all the different available waxes and find out which combinations play well together.
Right.
In recent years, one of those components has actually been the vegetable waxes. We found out a long time ago, as some others did, that vegetable waxes and soy waxes in particular play together quite well. And your previous guest on soy waxes may have mentioned something similar. They tend to work together very well. And so customers that want to include some aspect of vegetable waxes, we could we can accommodate that by having the blend with the paraffin. So one of the things Joe had asked is complementary additives. So,
you know, once we've refined all these waxes, there's all kinds of different things we can blend depending on the end application. So lately in the market, the natural waxes or the waxes, coconut waxes have been
apricot. You guys deal with apricot at all?
We don't deal with the apricot. We just have not found, at least from our point of view, really no value. We don't have a lot of customers asking for it, other than they may have seen the blend somewhere else.
Right.
It doesn't seem to offer any performance advantages. It's expensive. We really have not considered it at all. We've looked at it, at like the blends that have that. We just don't feel they're to what we want. We have incorporated some beeswax into some blends that has some nice properties. The main natural ones appear to be the coconut and the soy are really sort of the two go-to non-petroleum products that we would blend with our waxes.
And you had mentioned your 6046A is your coconut blend. Do you have a soy blend, or is it the same one?
Well, the 6006A is a soy paraffin blend. We also have one called 6027A, which is a soy, coconut, and petroleum wax blend. So it actually has all three.
All three, okay.
And then we have another blend that's 6036A that has... we don't disclose the amount of soy or product in our formulas. We kind of can tell, you know, a 6036A has more soy relative to the 6006. And then we are actually working or we're looking at some potential non-petroleum blends just because people have asked for it. What we are finding in the marketplace, talking to a lot of customers, small and large, is they have worked with 100% soy. They have found it in some cases challenging to master the process or to get the process to the point where they like it and the fragrance performance where they like it. And so we've been working with a lot of customers that have previously worked with 100% soy that are now working with blends.
Right. We found that a long time ago, Jamie and I were working with soy, and we found that paraffin goes a long way to make it much more friendly to work with.
So we've seen customers that are saying, look, I want to go 100% natural, renewable, yada, yada, yada. And then when they get working with it on a larger scale, it becomes a little more daunting. And so they've sort of pulled back a little bit and said, okay, maybe I would consider working with a blend. I can still say that I have a blend, a soy blend or something like that, but I get the benefits of the paraffin. The petroleum waxes, when mixed with the vegetable waxes, the way they complement each other is, so what the soy wax offers, it obviously offers the candle maker a green angle that they can market their product, right? They can say, hey, my product has whatever in it, makes them happy. You know, it is a product that largely, if you're in North America, most of the soy wax is going to come from North America. So that's kind of cool about it. Although all our waxes are blended in North America, but the paraffin, what it does for the vegetable is vegetable wax on its own. And your previous guest would be a lot more expert on this than I would, but you do tend to get what's called polymorphism, or the crystallization of the wax. And petroleum waxes, particularly microcrystalline waxes, will tend to mitigate that crystallization effect. It's the synergy of the paraffin and the vegetable wax working together will provide you with that smooth surface, as opposed to having the spotty or the crystallized fat bloom.
Fat bloom.
Yeah. Fat bloom, yes.
Yeah.
The petroleum-based waxes, at least from my experiences talking with fragrance manufacturers, is they do tend to get a little more flexibility or ability to achieve a stronger fragrance throw. I guess it's easier to formulate with the paraffin waxes. They can tend to be less restrictive on the fragrance throw. So these bond together. These work together quite well. If you select the right components, they will play together very well.
Now, we talked about the toxicity when it comes to ingesting the wax. How about in the burning of the paraffin waxes? It's a big debate out there whether, you know, it has toxic levels of something or other. But the wax by itself, always been my opinion, is safe. It's what you're adding, you know, the fragrances and the dyes that may cause an issue. But we talked about dyes last time, and we were also reassured that they're so regulated that there's no toxic levels in the dyes either.
So it, you know, what the candle maker needs to focus on is the candle system. So you can make a unsafe burning candle with emissions a number of different ways if you're not properly designing the candle system. The National Candle Association several years ago actually did a study that had as its participants both petroleum wax companies, including IGI, and vegetable wax companies, including Cargill. And they took waxes and they had them put into what we felt were properly designed candle systems. So they had a paraffin, a soy, a stearic acid candle, and there might have been a palm one too, I think. And they had a third-party lab test these products in Germany. That was where the third-party company was located. And essentially the conclusion was that your emissions are not significantly different between the candle types, as long as you're designing the system properly with the wicks and all that stuff.
Right. So we talk about that a lot, about testing, having that toolbox of now waxes we could add to our toolboxes, our fragrances, our wick, and how they all have to work together to make the safest candle.
You know, from the wick world, is in the small differences in the wick that can make a huge difference in the burn.
Absolutely.
You know, if it's not woven right, or if the wick wax coating is not quite correct, if you use one, you know, using two small ones instead of one big, I mean, there's so many, like the wicking variables is it, you know, getting it to burn properly, and then having the components in there that are going to, you know, you're talking candle combustion now, right? Which is a whole nother science, and you could do a whole topic on candle combustion.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah.
And so, you know, we, the petroleum wax, they've been used in candles for decades. You know, we feel pretty safe about it. But we feel that is done under the auspice of a properly designed candle system.
Right.
I mean, that's the key.
What was the outcome of that test? Do they feel across the board a candle made safely is has safe levels of
emissions? And I can send you at some point that there was a document that they developed. It's quite scientific, at least for the average candle maker, probably might be a little bit beyond their bandwidth as far as the science and stuff. But there's people say studies say this, studies say that. I mean, there are all kinds of studies out there. Ultimately, it's up to that candle maker to know what they're putting into their candle. Petroleum waxes, by nature, they are a hydrocarbon. You're burning those hydrocarbons as a fuel to go through the wick, the wick being the conduit. And if you're impeding that flow of fuel, putting things in it, too much fragrance, for example, things like that, then you're interrupting the proper combustion process, in my opinion. And you're not getting the burn that you should be getting.
Right.
So,
And if you don't get that burn, that's when you get the toxins that can come off, although at low levels. And in that study, what was interesting was more or less how they defined it, because what they did in the study was, above all the candles, they would have some type of tissue or collector, and the emissions would make that collector dirty or collect on this pad. And afterwards, they would then analyze the different things that came off in the pad. And that's how they were able to determine that there really was no major difference and there is really no major toxicity until you get to levels of burning so many candles in your room that it's not a normal thing. So paraffin gets a bad rap as far as being toxic, and when it really isn't. And it's just as sustainable in many ways, or less of a carbon footprint, the way that the refineries have been worked over the years. So as long as you do your things right, all the different tools and waxes available to you as a candle maker are equal. Marketing, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, I mean, when you say refinery, people have in their mind driving up I-95 in North Jersey, seeing these smokestacks sticking out of the ground and
smelling
Joe knows what I'm talking about, right? I can tell you the wax refineries are not like that. First of all, soy wax is made with a refinery, right? But even at IGI, I can tell you the one thing that was interesting is the refinery in Toronto actually meets ISO 14000, which is an environmental quality standard. And someone told me that the water that comes out as far as the effluent is cleaner than the water that goes into the plant.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all the weight, we have all the requirements for making sure we're not discharging anything and filtering. And sure, the water is actually more pure when it comes out of IGI than when it comes in from the city.
Interesting.
Which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I wouldn't doubt that. Well, that's a lot of interesting facts, and you gave us a lot of different things to think about, a lot of knowledge that's going to definitely help a lot of people. And I really want to thank you for your time, Joe. Was there anything else you wanted to hit?
No, I'm looking at my list. We pretty much covered everything I thought was what our listeners are looking for. Steve, I appreciate your knowledge. Maybe we'll have some follow-up podcasts in the future to talk about some other things we didn't, different subjects and different. You had a lab technician that wanted to jump on but wasn't available, but we can certainly do that at a later date. But yeah, everything was great.
Yeah, I guess what I would recommend for your viewers is, particularly on the smaller manufacturers, typically have not had the opportunity. They just kind of jump right into the candle making from maybe it started as a hobby and a business, and they haven't really had the opportunity to really learn the ins and outs of the properties and the tests and the ways that these things are evaluated. And this is important, when you're purchasing waxes, especially at larger amounts, that you really, because a wax refinery, they are making the product. Okay, sure, they're making it for a candle blend, but when it's approved, there are certain tests and criteria that they're going by, and understanding those could be very valuable. And I think that's what she would like, that our lab tech would like to, service manager would like to talk to your audience about at some point.
Absolutely. That would be that makes sense.
I just want to jump in and say one last thing. Mm-hmm. IGI makes a lot of blends, and Steven mentioned the distributors you could buy it from. But note this, at every distributor level, they'll give you recommended parameters on how to use the product.
Yes.
Remember, it's recommended in your environment. It might be tweaked a little bit. So what's recommended is not written in stone. So as a candle maker, that's where, as Steve had said, the science and the art come together. They give you a recommendation. You get that feel and you take that formula down the path that you want to get the best result.
And particularly the wick, something we spoke about in every podcast is I'm always surprised when either a distributor or a manufacturer says, use HTP wicks. These will be perfect. You're leaving out so many other possibilities to make a better candle. I'm sure they've done their testing in the lab and maybe their toolbox was limited to HTP, but as a candle maker, never rule out a wick series or a fragrance series or anything else that because the recommendation says so. I've seen so many candles improved on by using a wick that was not necessarily recommended. CD wicks are real popular. The Premier wicks work very well in soy paraffin blends and paraffin blends. So, always be a little bit of caution when it comes to following word for word what's being recommended.
That's a good point because we've sent wax samples in the past and they say, well, I don't really like the burn. Well, what were you using for wicks? Well, they're using the wicks that they had at their shop, right?
Right.
Which are not necessarily, you're using a different blend. You're going to need a different wick. And you may correct me if you think it'd be a better way. I mean, we've always kind of recommended, and we've had some other wick people, that the wick should be the last thing that you figure out what to use. So in other words, you got your jar. Okay, you got a jar, probably vessel or something shape that you want that's going to be marketable. Figure out your fragrance and wax combination. Get in there, your color, your additives, whatever you're putting in there, and then figure out what kind of wick you want to use. Is that, would you recommend that path of kind of pick, testing the wick after you put all that other stuff together?
Well, personally, I agree. I like that. I also go the step further and I like to use that formula or try that formula in the production environment before I even start wicking it. So I think it's a very good way and a very good method for people to start formulating and looking at things.
Right. You may find that, again, the recommended wick was one and you made a better candle using a different wick. So yeah, I mean, choosing the wick kind of comes naturally last. I think if you start with it, you're limiting yourself once again. But also knowing that if you choose your wick last and you want to stick with that wick series, you could adjust your fragrance levels or adjust your colors or even try a different wax.
Very well.
All right, guys. Again, thank you, Steve, for your time.
Thanks. Oh, anytime. It's a pleasure. Anytime you guys need some input, just how to get a hold of me.
You got it. Thank you very much.
See you, fellas.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye. See you, Jay.